Now, what is the issue of paranoia? Well, the Bible puts a great truck in the area of watching, constant vigilance and watching. That's what being a watchman is all about. What are you watching for? And the stock answer is, we're waiting for Jesus to come back. And unfortunately, that's not the only thing you're supposed to be watching for. There are dangers out there, warning things that have to be guarded against. Among other things, by the way, Jesus warned that in the end times, in the latter days, would come such times where deception would be so good as to deceive even the elect if that were possible. And so here you have this whole concept of paranoia. Remember, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're not being followed. A certain amount of self-defense and watchfulness is a healthy thing. Where it becomes paranoia is where it's everywhere and it is crippling you so badly that you can't function. That's where it emerges into sort of a pathological state. But here on the program, we started out reporting on a lot of agendas that were underway, a lot of which have come true, and we continue to do that. And why is that? Well, you can plan your life with some of these facts in mind. Now, let me take this further to what we just talked about with John Carman. Why am I concerned about corruption in government? Can we tie some dots together? Yeah, we can. First of all, we have a government that where the large number of the people now have varying worldviews, many of whom don't believe in absolute values, absolute truth, or for that matter, absolute morality or right or wrong. So for them, life degenerates into what we call pragmatic issues. What can I get out of it? What will this do for my career? Etc., etc. Then we take a plethora of laws, just swamped out with laws out there, so which anybody can be guilty when they have to be. Then we take the third trend. Remember, we did a show a couple of weeks ago with Barrett Chose on the
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us, we will have very, very shortly with us on the line one of our very special friends. It's Joan Paris. And Joan, as you know, is a businesswoman, mother, but she's also a researcher and world traveler. And she's gone all throughout the world to meetings of the World State of the World Forum and the Millennium Summit and the various international conferences to gather information to bring back here so that we can better understand what's really going on. Now, the problem is that most people out across America really don't understand that there are a group of very powerful and wealthy people. Their goal is a new world order, a new world religion under their control. And one of their objectives is the Earth Charter. This is, as Gorbachev says, and you must understand, Gorbachev is one of the leaders of this whole movement, the Butcher of Budapest, of Afghanistan, the former head of the Murder Incorporated, KGB, the former dictator of Russia. is one of the leaders of this movement, along with Marie Strong, a multi-billionaire, who is, for all intents and purposes, the Secretary General of the United Nations. Now, you probably think Kofi Annan actually is the Secretary General, but when you see his right-hand move, why Marie Strong is pulling the string. Maurice is the Assistant Secretary General, and he is the power behind so much of what's going on in the world. And then representing the Rockefeller vast wealth, and you probably believe that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are the richest people in the world. And that's what you're supposed to believe, because that's what their media tell you. But what I mean their media, I'm talking about the Rockefeller-controlled media, that they are basically in control of what's going on today. The Rockefellers have countless hundreds of billions of dollars and corporations. A lot of the corporations where the stock would ordinarily be worth maybe $10,000 a share is listed at $1 a share. So we have no idea what their wealth is, but these are the most wealthy people in the world. And the number two man in this chain of command within the Rockefeller Empire is a man named Stephen Rockefeller. So Stephen Rockefeller, Marie Strong, and Mikhail Gorbachev are the major driving force behind what's going on. And right now we're having a little difficulty because we're hoping to get Joan with us, but she's at the gate. She can't get it open. Hopefully my wife will be coming up behind her very soon. Have you ever had one of those days when everything seems to go wrong? Sort of reminds me of a story was told when I was very young about this fellow, and he operated the train, and he fell out of bed in the morning, just sort of accidentally, on the way to work, and then he fell out of bed, and then of course he went in to brush his teeth, and the water didn't work, and he still stumbled going down the stairs and twisted his ankle, and everything just went from bad to worse. Just nothing seemed to work right, and so he gets on this train, he's going down the track. You know, he looks out the window and he sees the train coming directly at them in the opposite direction on the same track. And he looked over at the assistant locomotive engineer and he said, "Charlie, do you ever have one of those days when just everything seemed to go wrong?" Well, that's sort of the way we feel this evening. Fortunately, Joan it will be coming. She got stuck at the gate. We were going to have Michael Shaw of Agenda 21 doing the program. His car got stuck, and this being towed at the present time. Hopefully he'll be here very soon. So I'm without a guest. I'm without a subject. So I'll tell you a little bit about the Earth Charter and these incredible people who really run the world. Now, you may think that we have a president of the United States and he's the man who's in charge. And if you believe that, why, you're incredibly naive. Tony Blair of England, George Bush of the United States, and so many of the people, really are simply figureheads for the power elite who rule the world. This is the way it's always been, and you might as well face it. If you want to read what the other side says, we take their publications, so we have a pretty good idea. The Lucis Trust, which, of course, is one of the most powerful organizations in the world, and you've never heard of it because it used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, and we've told that the evil one rules the world. We know when Christ was on the Mount of Temptation that he was challenged by the devil, who said, "If you'll just simply fall down and worship me, I can give you all the kingdoms of this world." Well, how could he possibly make such a ridiculous offer unless he controlled the kingdoms of this world? And that's really is tragically the situation we face today. Most of our nations are under Luciferian control. You can go to Washington, D.C., do you realize the whole of Washington, D.C. is laid out in occult and astrological patterns? That we carry a book published by HarperCollins that goes into the occult architecture of our nation's capital going back to the early 1800s. You go to Jerusalem today and you look on the Knesset building or the Supreme Court building, and you'll see the triangle with the all-seeing eye. So you feel a lot of people point to that, and they say, "You see, the Jewish nation or Israel is behind this whole satanic move." But of course it isn't. I mean, any more than our country is, our leaders are behind this. They many times are controlled by it. But this is a worldwide Luciferian movement. It involves every society. It involves the media. It involves many of the great corporate heads. It involves the great tax-exempt foundations. And the reason you never hear about it is because they control the media. They obsessively control what the American people think. Well, they hold their meetings regularly, and they held their first major international meeting in 1971, and the first meeting went right along with the dictates of the Club of Rome, which had come out with a book. Actually, the meeting was in 1972. It followed immediately after the Club of Rome report, The Limits of Growth. Certainly, Maurice Strong was a member of the Club of Rome, and he headed the first Earth Summit meeting. The second Earth Summit was in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro, and they laid out the plan for control of the world for sustainable development. And if you substitute the word socialism or fascism for sustainable development, you'll understand what they're talking about. And then, of course, the third Earth Summit was in 1997, headed by Maurice Strong. The fourth Earth Summit was in the year 2002. And Joan, you were actually there, weren't you?
Yes, I was, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, we finally got Joan anyway, and hopefully we'll have Michael Shaw here very soon. And Michael was going to interview Joan, and he'll be coming along shortly. Anyway, Joan, why don't you explain to our listeners what the Earth Summit is, what the Earth Summit was that you went to, and why the Earth Charter is so vitally important to everybody listening to this program, because it really is a mind comp for the Luciferian control of the world, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing, Dr. Stan. In fact, last night I was reviewing, just listening again to the tapes of a workshop that I was in that Dr. Stephen Rockefeller held concurrent with the Millennium Summit in 2000. But anyway, this Earth Charter is a document that we don't often talk too much about, and people really aren't aware of it. I was first introduced to the Earth Charter when I was at the 1997 Rio Earth Summit, and that was where it was unveiled by Stephen Rockefeller. And it was also at that particular Earth Summit that Gorbachev described the Earth Charter as a new set of 10 or 15 commandments to replace the original 10. That's a very simple way to put it, but that was how Mikhail Gorbachev described it. And I think it's probably the easiest way for most of us to relate to the whole spiritual nature of what they're setting about to do with the Earth Charter. It's a new ethical framework where nature becomes God, and so it's just the exact opposite of a Judeo-Christian ethic. And it's the opposite, in fact, of what Islam is about, but I don't want to confuse this discussion with Islam because they don't worship the same God that the Jews or the Christians worship.
No, but I think they've all been targeted by these people. We have something off one of the Earth Summit, Earth Charter websites talking about the necessity of identifying and eliminating the fundamentalists, the Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews. They're talking about eliminate. When they say eliminate, I think they really mean murder. But you see, these people are different. They have a different set of values. They worship a different God themselves, and they have no human compassion because they are part of the elite that runs the world.
That's
and
it.
If anybody wants to see those pages, we have them. They've taken them down off their webpage, but fortunately, one of our researchers picked them off, and we have them. We'll be glad to send it to you, where they talk on page 10 of this treatise on the Earth Charter about eliminating people like, well, if you're a Christian, like you and me. So go ahead, Joan.
Exactly. Well, anyway, what I want to convey is that the environment is what's being used as a central organizing principle with the Earth Charter. And as a little bit of history, Stephen Rockefeller was charged with overseeing the writing of this Earth Charter document. And The history that I know about it, in fact, the clearest history that I know came directly from him. I think as you were explaining to the audience, Dr. Stan, 1972 was the first time that the international community ever came together to begin work on this global environmental planning, and that was 70 nations that got together in Stockholm at the Stockholm Conference in 1972. And immediately after that conference, this is amazing, the top legal minds in the world were brought together to begin work on a document called the Draft Covenant on Environment and Development. And they spent 6 years writing this document. And what it does is it brings together all of the environmental law in the world, and it does elevate nature above man. Another couple steps in the history here is in 1982. It's interesting, and I hadn't picked up on this until just as I was reviewing these tapes last night. But back in 1982, the UN itself actually adopted what's called the World Charter for Nature. And it was one of those documents that was, again, had nature at its core, you know, elevated above man. And so this was something that Stephen Rockefeller really liked. And actually, it was adopted by all of the nations at the UN in 1982. It was accepted by everybody except the United States at that time. And then, of course, it moved on to that Brundtland Commission in 1987, out of which came the 92, the 97, and the 2002 Earth Summits, the last two of those which I attended. One thing about this draft covenant on environment and development is the core concept of this, in fact, the whole core concept of the Earth Charter, is a principle that is called the precautionary principle. And it's a completely different legal standard than what we have in United States law or English law. And under that principle, you're guilty until you're proven innocent. It calls for precaution. So if you want to cut down a tree on your property, you'd have to be able to prove ahead of time that you weren't going to damage anything. That's precautionary principle. It's a very severe standard of law. There's an Article 8 in this document that says that your right or any right to development necessitates environmental protection because, again, the environment is this central organizing principle and everything is subjugated to the environment and to nature. Anyway, that your right to development necessitates environmental protection and global equity. And I'd like to quote what it says because, you know, we talk about these documents and we think, well, it's out there and it's not connected to anything. I don't understand it because, well, you know, where does it fit in? This document says that equity will be achieved through implementation of the International Economic Order. Aha, the International Economic Order. Well, we're all hearing about globalization all the time. We know what that is. This is the connection. This is the fit. Is that international economic order, it's money, and also through transfers of resources to developing countries. Well, we might be coming aware in this country of the transfer of our resources, our jobs, through these global agendas, GATT, NAFTA. We're beginning to see the fraying around the edges of our economy as we are transferring those resources to other countries. And this, yes, Michael, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. What an exciting evening it was to get here.
Well, Michael, you know, this is a spiritual battle.
Well, when Stan talks, too, about sitting at overlooking the beautiful Monterey Bay, I'll tell you, you've got to take some treacherous roads to get that pleasure. And I made a wrong turn in the right place. But to make sure I understand what you're suggesting here, you've said that the precautionary principle, in essence, changes the presumptions that operate under common or American law and that have existed and have been being developed for centuries. I mean, in England, before the United States. The precautionary principle, I think what you've said, is changes the presumption of innocence into a proof required of your innocence when charged with crimes. But it seems to me it might even be worse than that, because it's not just that presumption that gets shifted, but under American and traditional common law, in order to be accused of a crime and found guilty of a crime, there must be an evil intent, and the law calls that the mens rea. But it seems to me the precautionary principle takes a different standard. It says, we'll define what is a crime. It takes no guilty mind to be guilty of a crime, and once accused, you must prove your innocence. So we have
absolutely
I thought that's what you were suggesting. As it, when it comes to civil law, it changes the presumptions and the burdens of proof there as well, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
So you could have a neighbor complain that you're doing something with your property and make charges against you in a civil matter, or the government itself, a planning department, for instance, and the presumptions are no longer where the plaintiff would need to show a burden of proof. Here, a defendant would have to again show he hadn't violated the precautionary principle. So this is another way to take a straight-aimed attack at both property and liberty, and really when you boil it down, on human life.
Exactly.
But now let me also understand, you're suggesting that the economic formats that arise under the precautionary principle are also a new set of rules for Americans. And you talk about a political globalization, and I'm not sure I understand exactly what you mean when you talk about the economic globalization and how that might be somehow nefarious.
Well, for example, there's a presumption that Americans are the wealthiest and the greatest consumers of natural resources in the world, and it's presumed that that is evil. And that's why this document that came out of that 1972 Stockholm conference calls for the transfer of resources from the wealthy nations to the developing nations. And that's how you get there.
All right, so it's a managing global trade, not in a free market context,
no,
but in more of a Stalinist.
Very Stalinist.
Context.
Assess, monitor, and control, policing. We're moving into a global police state, and when we come back from this break, I'll expand on that a little more. Okay, so to develop that concept of the global or the international economic order a little bit more, again, for the listener, we always want to connect this. Otherwise, it's way out there. We don't understand it, and we don't want to be bothered with it. But listen, take out the United States Patriot Act and understand that the first, almost half of that, has to do with finances. The United States Patriot Act is not about Middle Eastern terrorists. I'm sorry, I hate to break that bubble for you in case you haven't already heard it. But one of the things that it discusses in there is this international economic order and how the United States is a member of the Basel Committee and the Financial Action Task Force. So then you do a little research and you look at what these organizations are, that our laws are being crafted to require that our financial institutions, that our businesses, that our government must adhere to, and we find out the Basel Committee is an adjunct of the Bank of International Settlements, the granddaddy of all the central banks. It requires all of our central banks to report to that. And the Financial Action Task Force is this coercive international global entity that sets out a whole set of principles that enforces and has a way of extorting compliance with countries around the world for this international economic order. It's a very, very coercive, manipulative as you say, police type mechanism. And these type of things are being codified into all of our American laws. They're affecting us in our banking. Insurance now has been put under that. And I always like to say how when I was at this Earth Summit in 97, I asked some man who was one of the presenters there at the Earth Summit about insurance companies, and him telling me that they have now realized that insurance companies were the largest holders of private investment in the world. He told me we have to tap into that to pay for what we're doing. And they, in fact, have done that with the USA Patriot Act. And was it Gary Hart that said George Bush could use that September 11th tragedy to bring this country into a new world order? In fact, that is being done. Of course, the Patriot Act was written. It was crafted many, many, you know, months, years prior to September 11th. But this is this international economic order that's just spreading its tentacles through our society in any way it can that will choke us and destroy every single one of us as individuals and as a corporate entity.
Well, you know, this can be very overwhelming for people who have followed what you've said, and because it really suggests that that the ugliest story that we've ever seen in the movie houses or read in books is lying before us, because there aren't many people, whether they consider themselves liberals or conservatives, who would not come to understand that a new world order run by international bankers and rich foundations pretending to be foisting their power upon the rest of us for the purposes of protecting bugs and plants. That green cloak of environmentalism is likely to draw in a lot of people. But the average citizen out there is going to say, well, wait a minute. We've got a Congress, and a Congress is there to protect our rights and liberties and property as American citizens. And I know my congressman's a good man, and so I can't imagine that things could be this far out of control. How would you attempt to explain that?
Well, just as an example. As an example, when I was at the 10-year follow-up to the 92 Earth Summit, I was in Johannesburg in 2002, and one of the venues that I visited a couple of times is the United States Conference of Mayors. The incoming head of the United States Conference of Mayors was giving, he was at a press conference, and he was presenting at the press conference for the State Department. And it was a wonderful opportunity to ask him why the Conference of Mayors had endorsed the Earth Charter. And I asked him if the framework of laws in the United States had been modified to such an extent that they could accommodate the legal framework of the Earth Charter. Well, he was very embarrassed and just said, you know, please talk to me afterwards. I mean, he didn't know what I was talking about, but he's the incoming head and this organization has endorsed it. So afterwards we talked and he said, well, we didn't read it. The mayor of Burlington, Vermont presented it at our annual meeting, said this was a good thing, and we all voted for it. So there is ignorance. I mean, there is just flat out ignorance. Irresponsibility, I mean criminal irresponsibility, if you read and understand what that document is about.
Well, it strikes me then that it's about time that the American people begin to understand this. And the steps to pull ourselves out of it, I suspect, are much simpler than we might be otherwise thinking, because we've got such a massive and maniacal plan that is working to restructure our law, long-standing, the law that has brought Western civilization to the pinnacle that it has achieved is now at risk, and the economic system of free enterprise is being replaced with schemes for international redistribution and for government-private partnerships, meaning the end of private property, which brings a dawning or a sunset to civil liberties and really the end of life as a human being itself, because we end up becoming chattel. But with all this out there, it seems to me that all we need is a Congress understands this issue I'd suggest that certainly by looking at our congressman here on the Central Coast, an avid UNer who flies the United Nations flag outside his office in Congress, and a fellow who is a great supporter, though he denies it publicly, of Agenda 21 and sustainable development, the precautionary principle, and the Earth Charter, that if fellows like this, and he has lots of friends on both sides of the aisle, this is not a Democrat thing or a Republican thing, but it seems to me that if we ask ourselves, community by community, is our congressman a constitutionalist or a globalist? Because right there we've got the two basic sets of principles that divide good from evil. And we've got congressmen right now, whether they understand political theory or not, we've got congressmen who are abandoning the concepts of self-governance, are embracing the concepts of collectivism, which leads to tyranny, and which will terminate man's exercise of what are his unalienable rights, and will cause us all to have to comply to this new order in ways that will step by step bring down the United States of America. I think I'm hearing from you that that's the intent.
Oh, it's absolutely the intent, and they've gotten away with it. I mean, when you look at the number of people that voted for the United States Patriot Act, 200 pages in HTML, without ever reading it, what, it was everyone except about three of our congressmen?
Well, I think I've heard Ron Paul say that nobody had a chance to read that.
But I mean that voted for it. I know that Ron Paul did not vote for it, and there were just maybe one or two others who didn't. So we are in a pathetic situation with anyone in an elected position of government, whether it be our president, whether it be his cabinet, whether it be... of course, they're appointed, but our Congress, in our state legislatures, in our county, in our local government. So, yes, you're right to hold out government as a very tangible source of redress where the citizens can become involved. You know, educate, vote out, elect people that understand the Constitution and want to preserve a free way of life. But this Earth Charter, of course, has been presented to not just heads of state. It's been presented and endorsed by civil society. Civil society are these non-governmental organizations that have been empowered with our money and legislative, public, private partnerships to use our resources against us, to destroy this nation. And businesses have been totally co-opted into this through a program at the United Nations called the Global Compact. The other thing that's so important is, yes, we need to come at this matter, in every tangible aspect, because it touches into business and education. It reaches down into the churches. But we also need to understand that the Earth Charter is a spiritual, document, and there is a need to attack it in a spiritual vein also. So I don't want to lose sight of the fact that this is at its very root, at its core, a spiritual document. For example, the Earth Charter was entombed, encased in an ark, the Ark of Hope. That's the opposite of the Ark of the Covenant. And I like to say that that the good people, the fruits of the Spirit, or good, manifests itself as love, joy, hope, peace, self-control. And the opposite of good manifests itself in opposite ways. And that's how we see the Earth Charter, this Ten Commandments that destroys man, this new set of Ten Commandments that puts man on a lower level than nature, that allows forest fires to run wild. It allows firefighters and private property. It allows for death and destruction. So it's just the opposite of good. It is absolutely evil personified. And for example, this Ark of Hope that was created for this new Ten Commandment, it's carried on these poles. And this is just an interesting aspect. You can go to a website and see this. It's you know, it's beautifully painted, and it's crafted from a single sycamore tree that came out of Italy. I'm sorry, out of Germany. It would be interesting to know the significance of that. But these poles are representative, according to the artist, of unicorn horns. And it's so fascinating to study or to be aware of the occult aspect of this. Radio Liberty has a book by Dr. Kathy Burns about occult symbols. And I looked at what the symbolism of the unicorn horn was. And, of course, there's lots of occult symbolism because this goes back centuries and centuries. But the unicorn horn is the same as the Italian horn, and it was used by the Druids in Scotland and Ireland as instruments for castrating animals and humans. That's pretty bizarre. But the Italian horn is also known as the unicorn horn and is an occult symbol for the devil to bless one's finances. Could that be the international economic order? And we're parading this around on unicorn horns. I mean, it is so bizarre. But I have to tell you that when I go to a Gorbachev State of the World Forum, I know that up at the Fairmont on an upper floor that there are rooms, room after room after room, and you have different cults and these pantheistic pagan, satanic groups that are carrying on spiritual practices, spiritual warfare, and as an example, one of the groups, I wouldn't go near that because I don't want my spirit destroyed, because we're talking about really powerful, powerful forces. But for example, I found the literature of the pig god from Hawaii. So we're talking about, you know, animal-human, androgynous-type entities. And also, when I was at the Gorbachev Millennium Summit, a venue when it was held in New York, I did see the kiva that was built, and it symbolizes the underground coming out of the earth, coming out of Mother Earth. And of course, they're smoking this peyote. In fact, I was at the drug, what's that drug, DARE program, the DARE program here in Santa Cruz County several years ago. And they have these native dancers dancing and also smoking or burning the peyote. And if you go to the Grand Canyon, you'll find the kivas glorified. And so we see all of this occult and mysticism coming forward. And we just might think it's nice folklore, but there really is a very deep, dark, and powerful spirituality that's connected with this.
While many people may not always be relating to spirituality, it's clear that some people have a deep and abiding faith in the supernatural of good, and similarly, there are people who have a deep and abiding connection to the spirituality of evil. So, for those who don't think good and evil exist, they need to at least recognize that there are others who do. And if the others who have a deep-seated belief in evil end up in control of the monetary system and the economic programs and a system of world governance and the philosophy behind the law for America, then we will pay a very heavy price. And for those who think, well, this will extend beyond the term of the life of baby boomers, I suspect they may not be right. But even if they were right, you know, what is it that we're leaving our children? The sustainable developers talk about leaving our resources for future generations. And the way that really comes down when you deal with these federal, state, and now local government officials, they intend to take our resources to create water shortages, to create other resource shortages, so that America's consumption of natural resources, the resources that we develop, becomes reduced so that it becomes a percentage of our world population. That means an 80% reduction in our use of natural resources that are not depleting, because the marvelous aspect of this earth and of the world's greatest resource, which is human capacity, if we lose our ability to be able to disturb and create wonder out of nature, then we will simply recede back and become an enslaved society.
And that's what's intended. That's what's planned for us. And you're right. Not everybody is equipped to recognize or to deal with this in the spiritual. But people really do need to be aware. And at some point, you know, we awaken or come to understand. It's such a, I don't know, it's been a long and difficult process for me even to come just to the fact of the spiritual. I thought, oh, that's too bizarre. And it is important that people deal with it in a tangible way, ultimately. I mean, we all need to do some part in it. And to deal with it tangibly is because we are flesh and we live in a tangible world, that's how we approach it. But when we realize that this is affecting our education and it's affecting our government and it's affecting our businesses, there's, what do I say? It affects us from the bedroom to the boardroom and from the cradle to the grave. So it's a lifelong program, and it's tied up in population control agendas that are brutal, that are destructive, that are demeaning, that determine who can produce and in what quantity, and right down to the business environment. It dictates, you know, who will be monitored, and actually everything is monitored. In fact, Rockefeller said that this charter is actually a tool to guide and assess for compliance. So those are very gentle words to guide, but we're talking about an iron boot guiding here, and assessing is measuring, it's monitoring, it's controlling. In fact, he said that this Millennium Ecosystem Assessment Project that was launched a few years ago is working hand in glove with the concepts of the Earth Charter, where every square inch of property, of natural resources, is to be measured. It's to be monitored. It's to be controlled.
If you have questions you'd like to ask geopolitical journalist Joan Paros, call us at 464-8295 or at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Joan, this information portends quite poorly for America. What notions do you have about what it is that can be done? Is studying the Constitution a good place to start so that you understand what limited government is? You know, spirituality comes right down to earth and takes a form in our government. And that was the wonder, it strikes me, of our founding, was that there was a document created by people who were championing good and who were attempting to set up a system, nothing more than a internal control system that managed and limited government and caused it to be the champion of people's rights and not, as all other nations had been prior to it, a destroyer of people's rights. Why is it that our own government has seemed to have lost that, and how is it that we can get our government back on the track of protecting and not destroying individual rights?
You know, getting our government back on track is just a monumental task, Michael. And when we talk about education, I think about our children. And I look at our education system having been co-opted. It's been co-opted and it's being used to destroy our children, to indoctrinate them into this new world order. In fact, this is what the United Nations calls the decade of education. And the Earth Charter is just been endorsed at the United Nations level by UNESCO, which is the Educational, Social, Cultural Organization. UNESCO was the one that launched the environmental education, and they work hand in glove with this Earth Charter.
Well,
but
Ronald Reagan had withdrawn from UNESCO some 20 years ago, had he not? So how could that be affecting the United States?
Well, there is an educational agenda that was signed back in Jomtien, Thailand, to introduce Education 2000. We know it as Goals 2000. And the federal government sees to it that that agenda, that curriculum, is brought into every school, every public school. So if we are not homeschooling our children and getting them to understand what the Constitution is about, then then you're absolutely right. We do need to educate our children and educate ourselves about the Constitution. I majored in political science, and I'm sorry to say that I really didn't get much about the United States and our liberties and freedoms out of that. It was Bush, actually, that did take that document from Thailand back into UNESCO. So, you know, it doesn't matter if they're Republicans or Democrats, as they march along, every single one of them is implementing these UN concepts. In fact, you know, some people talk about the Earth Charter and say, well, you know, it hasn't been adopted by the United Nations, so, you know, we still have hope. Well, you know, we always have hope. But at the Millennium Summit, I asked Tarja Halonen, who was the co-chair of the Millennium Summit. It was she was talking to some ladies after a session, and I asked her, I said, well, what are the prospects for getting the Earth Charter adopted? And she says, well, you know, it really doesn't matter because all of the concepts are embedded in everything that we do. They're embedded.
Well, we can also see the Wildlands Project, another UN notion, which had actually been turned down by the U.S. Senate in 1994 unanimously, is being implemented anyway. We're seeing dams being broken. We're seeing roads being closed. We're seeing fraudulent financing transactions undertaken by organizations like the Nature Conservancy that are tying up all kinds of land. You know, Joan, I just came back from Maine this weekend, where there was a Liberty in the Balance conference, and which will be available on DVD here in about 60 days. But what I learned there is that in Maine, 400,000 acres just last week were put into the hands of the Nature Conservancy, so that there's to be no more use of the natural resources from that land that had been privately owned for over 100 years and had been the source of a good wood pulp for paper. The Northern Paper Company is now gone, and those lands are now being held fallow by the Nature Conservancy. So they're able to implement these programs without formally adopting it, and that seems to be the pattern.
Well, and it's done because these dictates are adopted by organizations like the engineers, city planners, city local government planners.
Why do you think normal folks who are our neighbors, who are working down at city and county office buildings, would do such a thing to themselves, their children, and their neighbors?
I think it's ignorance, Michael. And then you also have people that are zealots for what they believe is a righteous cause, is preserving the environment. So people, they think that they're doing well, and the people that really understand, you know, the machinations of this evil, evil agenda are kind of a hidden core. They're the people I like to look at it the way Malachi Martin explains it on a tapes that I listened to from Radio Liberty. He said, you know, on any one day on the stock exchanges of the world, there are maybe 60 individuals that will trade in one day 40, 50, 60, 80 billion dollars. He said, those are the people. Those are the people that control, really run the world. And, you know, who are they?
Well, who are they?
Well, we find this being funded by the so-called great foundations. Yeah, wasn't it interesting, you know, the Rothschilds. In fact, the Rothschilds, a bit of history, the family shield has a unicorn on it. Met with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the new governor of California. I mean, what qualifications does this man have? What things are in his past that we should be concerned about, that he was just swept into office of one of the largest economies in the world? So you have the Rothschilds, you have the British royal family, the Rockefeller family. Stephen, who was overseeing the writing of this document, it was his family that gave the land for the United Nations headquarters in New York. So you have these really wealthy, powerful families. You have all of these royalty and potentates in Europe behind this. I mean, we're going back generations of power and wealth.
Well, it seems to me also that the foundations are a major source of this problem. And as I go around the country giving talks on this subject, I always come home having heard about certain foundations in each region that are masterminding the implementation of sustainable development in their own communities. You know, here on the Central Coast, it's the Packard Foundation. They're making contributions to every cultural, political, land use, and cultural activity that is founded in the concepts of the United Nations movement. You're talking about David Rockefeller, a quote from him in 1991 at a Bilderberger meeting went as this, quote, "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promise of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world had we been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years." Well, the good news is that we have a way to communicate now via radio and the internet, and our forefathers, facing the control of the press by the British government, had to do that on horseback. And so they had a much greater challenge than we do of spreading the word of truth. And it's when you look like your back is against the wall and things couldn't be bleaker, and you're certainly painting that picture, that it strikes me that the industriousness of the American people and the great tradition of Western civilization and its ability to have hope spring eternally, and the human spirit itself rises up and grabs back from those jaws of enslavement the freedom that is rightfully each of ours. Because you're right, it is spiritual at the core. It's a spiritual notion that makes man who he is, allows him to develop the conscience and use the reason that only man has the capacity for. But man must be free to do that. And to be free, one has to have the right to property, because that's what protects liberty. And it's with liberty and property that we each live a life that's our own. And that's called freedom.
Well, I'm inspired. And, you know, it's not that, you know, everybody is going to understand this battle. Not everyone is going to take up the charge.
If you don't take up the charge, you are part of the problem. You don't need to understand, I think, Joan. Our friends and neighbors and relatives don't need to understand it to the depth that you do, or to the economic aspects as I've attempted to make study. But everyone knows that something is wrong in America, and it's really no farther than checking the premise upon which this country was founded and asking yourself, are we following it?
And, well, what I was going to say is that don't be discouraged that, you know, not everyone is taking up the charge. But if you're in the listening audience, then you are a really special person, because you're listening to this type of information, you're understanding it, and you're the person that needs to take up the charge, because you are educated far beyond the average person. When I look at the information that came out of the House subcommittee reports on un-American activities in the 50s, and we look at what the communists intended to do to this nation, and simply understand that we were to be destroyed morally, and that very effectively has been done. The institutions that have kept our nation strong are so weak. So here again, it's important to keep strong the institutions and to restore those. So if you're in the listening audience, whether it's your schools, whether it's church, because all of these things have been effective, whether it's a strong marriage, if you're thinking about a divorce, figure out a way to keep that unit together and strong, and bring up your children so that they can be engaged in this battle. It's being done. We have so many homeschoolers across the nation that are teaching their children these concepts of liberty, of private property. They're teaching them about our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. So there is a strong body. And I'll tell you that these people at the global forums, they're really no smarter than any of the rest of us. They may be demonically energized. But I know my God is stronger than their God, because I'm protected when I'm around these people, and I feel the power. I feel that sense of power when I'm there, and I know that that they really are not as strong. And so often we feel weak, we feel overwhelmed because not everybody on our block understands the problem. But there's this joy and there's this strength that's there to draw upon if we'll do that and just step out and stand up for what's right.
Joan, Ray from Santa Cruz is calling. Go ahead, Ray.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'd like to ask both of you what you think of John Coleman's book, Conspirators, Hierarchy, The Committee of 300, if you've heard of it or...
I have not. Have you, John?
You know, I've heard of it, and I haven't read it, Ray, but certainly there are a number of books out there that are helpful to understanding. One that I read that was very helpful was written by Tex Mars, and I can't think of the title of it right now, but he actually goes through... what he would consider to be this inner core of about a dozen people, and names names, and describes their wealth and what they're involved with. For example, you know, the Cecil Rhodes, the diamond cartels, De Beers, that family in South Africa. So...
Yeah, well, the Committee of 300, according to John Coleman, I think both of you should try and get hold of that book. It's based on the 300 shareholders in the British East India Company. And essentially what he's saying is there are 300 so-called shareholders ruling the world now. And he names them all. He names virtually all of them in the book.
Hmm.
But I want to make one more comment about something that Leonard Horowitz said in one of his books. He said that the WHO, the World Health Organization, for instance,
uh-huh.
he said that was created by creatures behind the scenes, he called them. He said, we don't even know who they are, but a group of merchant bankers simply created this entity called the World Health Organization. And there are so many things like that are being created from behind the scenes, and we take them as being credible.
Well, and the disastrous part of that is that while this stuff has been happening on the international scene for a long while and people have kept a blind eye toward it, it is now happening through the federal government, through the state government, and in every county in this country. Behind the scenes, implementers, most of whom don't know what they're doing, are putting into place. It's no longer a planned conspiracy to do something. They are putting their New World Order, the sustainable development program that grows out of the Earth Charter, that is the political movement of the New World spirituality that is predicated in the Earth Charter, and it's happening throughout this country. Now, the good news again is that across this country, I'm seeing increasing writings from people like the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Foundation Watch and Mises Organization and amongst rising citizen groups everywhere, all of whom are coming together with a general awareness and an increasing collaboration on understanding the researched details which are now very evident to find. And so what's happening is a network for spreading this word is popping up, and the rise in, as Joan says, homeschooling gives us great hope, because I, in my own family, bringing our kids home, making a real family, not having a family that is marching to the tune of a government education system, but a family that marches to the tune of what mom and dad think. You know, it starts with the family, and then we'll move up and clean out our local governments, elect a good Congress, become increasingly aware, spread the word, because this evil is but a paper tiger. If we look it in the eye and say, down boy, go back under rocks.
It is a paper tiger. And you're right to note, Ray, that this is all going on in the dark, because evil can't flourish except under the cover of darkness. And it's all been hidden from view. They continue to hide what they're doing. And secrecy is the key to the successes that they've had to date.
Well, you know, if I can make one more point, I consider you two to be the only real intellectuals. People like you are the only real intellectuals in this society, because being an intellectual to me is trying to find out what's going wrong, what's really going wrong. You know what I mean? You're
Thank
doing
you.
The only real intellectual work, so keep it up.
Thank you for that compliment. That means a lot.
Okay.
I don't think you have to worry that Joan and I will keep it up. We quit when we stop, when only if we see the numbers of folks falling in to an increasing understanding and interest in this subject. And I'll tell you, Ray, it's happening. You know, not just here in Santa Cruz, but everywhere. Now, that's still a scratch on the wall, but the power of that truth and an increasing capacity to articulate what the facts are and how the facts relate to the truth is making the job a whole lot easier.
Thanks a lot.
I thank you for your call.
Okay.
Well, Joan, you know, the children really are the issue. You know, in our next hour, we're going to have one of the brilliant men from around this country, a man named Michael Chapman, who's working in the state of Minnesota with a group called EdWatch. And one of their leaders is a state senator there, and she's been successful in pulling the federal curriculum out of the state of Minnesota's curriculum. Now, she doesn't have it back yet to where it is that the curriculum in the schools is one based on academics and one that explains the true premise of political theory and why it is that America's experiment with self-governance is really mankind's greatest achievement. But they're making great progress. These folks understand the connection between mom and dad and their kids, and they see how particularly the federal government with its new national assessment programs, not national education programs, but national assessment programs, that means they want to know who your kids are and which ones of your children are compliant and which ones aren't. You know, but as Americans start to understand the manipulation going on with our kids so that if they don't get their takeover during the life of baby boomers, they'll get it through our children.
Assess, monitor, and control. And the education is key, like you say, especially now that UNESCO has endorsed the Earth Charter, and they have recognized that UNESCO is a task manager in the United Nations system of chapters 15, which is science, and chapter 36, which is education, of Agenda 21.
Well, it always comes back to Agenda 21, doesn't it?
It does.
So much from my experience here in Santa Cruz on the local Agenda 21 committees back in the mid-90s. I'll tell you what, I couldn't have learned more in a short period of time than I did then about how they begin the process of converting a free country into an enslaved country.
Dr. Stan here, and I'm going to turn this program over to Michael Michael Shaw, who's going to be our host this evening, and he's going to be interviewing Michael Chapman, who is on the line. So, Michael, take it over.
Well, good evening, audience, and good evening, Michael Chapman. You know, Michael comes to us from Minnesota with the Ed Watch Group, and hello, Michael, how are you?
Michael, doing real good. Good to hear your voice again.
Well, it's you know, the again for the audience is was about 72 hours ago when we parted company after spending 3 days back in Maine, just outside Portland, for a conference called Liberty in the Balance, where we made a DVD that that we're going to circulate. And you know, what a team that was back there who got to every aspect of this new globalization that seeks the end of Americans' experiment with freedom. And I'd say that that I enjoyed it. How about you, Michael?
Well, yeah, you know, every time I get together with a bunch of folks like this, I learn something new. And, you know, I went back after this conference and I started digging through some old documents and thought, you know, there was something in here that I just remember. And somebody there mentioned it. And so I went back and reread some pages and lo and behold, it made sense again. You know, it's amazing all of these state and federal and global government documents that we run across, and some of it doesn't make sense till years later when we start to put some pieces together, and that's what these kind of conferences do for me. So it's always a pleasure to be part of them.
Well, I have that same experience. It's always better the second time when you read it because the dots have just kind of come together. And we don't know everything they're doing, but we know their pattern, and we know their objective, and we know how they're implementing it. And, of course, key in the last hour, Michael, we were talking about the Earth Charter and how the Sustainable Development Program for this decade is to be focused on education.
Okay.
And we certainly have an educational revolutionary coup that has occurred in this country without the knowledge of parents or society generally, and I have to tell the audience, I have never seen anyone express that circumstance with the evidence in a PowerPoint presentation as well as you do.
And well, thanks, Michael. I appreciate that. You know, I spend a lot of time, probably a couple hundred hours for every 1 hour presentation I give, and primarily because I take the original documents and scan them and then show those documents and zoom in on the actual text, because some of this stuff is so fantastic. Nobody would believe it unless they were seeing the original documents. So that's kind of the cornerstone of how I put my presentations together, so folks will actually see the documents.
Well, in general, how is it that you'd characterize the shift that has been probably in process in this country for generations, but that has really accelerated in the last several years? How would you characterize the nature of that shift, its goals, and or how it's implemented?
Well, I'll tell you, Abraham Lincoln once said, "The philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will become the philosophy of government in next." And throughout history, we've seen that the shift has taken place in a culture or society through the education of the next generation. So I would say everything that we're fighting, whether it's gun issues, abortion issues, governance issues, economics, no matter what it is, property rights, of course, one of the most important, every single one of those issues that we're fighting on the forefront in government is fully embedded in the curriculum of our children. And so we've undergone a shift in the content and purpose of education, and it's driven, I believe, by a philosophy that is in complete antithesis to the founding philosophy that gave birth to this great nation.
How would you characterize this new philosophy? What is it, and why should mom and dad or grandma or grandpa be concerned?
Well, you know, I always go back. So many people talk about the Constitution as the basic root of our government, and really, the Constitution is nothing but a set of working papers that put in place what I would consider the seven basic principles of American liberty, and those are the seven principles contained in the Declaration of Independence. We forget that the Constitution was only written in order to form a more perfect union. We celebrate the birthday of our nation, however, on July 4th, the date of the signing of the Declaration. And so we have a number of principles that in order to put this new world order into play, must be changed or undermined in some way, shape, or another. And those seven principles are very simply national sovereignty, natural law, that is, law over the king, and what we see as an outcropping of self-evident truth, which is the third principle. All people are created equal and are equal before God. That gives us equal opportunity, regardless of who we are. Then we have our Creator-given unalienable rights of life, liberty, and property. Today, those have been undermined and changed within the curriculum to really be government-defined rights of choice, license, and the pursuit of fairness, as I call it, or welfare. Then we go to the purpose of government being to secure those God-given unalienable rights, and popular sovereignty, that is, government by the consent of the governed. So those are the seven base principles that have been undermined within our curriculum. And they must be undermined in order to make way for what has been popularly termed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or a Declaration of Interdependence. And that's where we're getting the concept of world citizenship from. Positive law, that is, the law is whatever the judges say it is. Self-evident truth is now replaced by a constructivist philosophy. That's the constructivism is the buzzword the education folks give it, but to you and I and your listeners probably understand it as postmodernism. There is no such thing as truth, there's only process. So we have to change the teaching of knowledge, facts, and information towards this teaching of process and feelings and consensus and all these kind of soft words.
Wow.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Joan was describing how the Earth Charter is a set of principles to replace the Ten Commandments. And so we have the same organized element, in this case, operating through the Federal Department of Education, adopting the new global education standards, who has caused our curriculum to seek to undermine the seven principles of the Declaration of Independence, upon which liberty is perceived. And, of course, the Earth Charter deals with the spiritual element. This deals with the political and form of government element of this emerging New World Order that sees human beings as biological resources. So,
yeah.
And that's what they're really doing with our children, is it not? They're making them,
well, yeah.
They're grouping them and treating them as though they're, you know, one set of insects or another.
Yeah, see, what's really happened, this is really a worldview shift, and yes, there is a very religious component to this. Everybody has a worldview, that is an understanding of where we came from, who we are, what we're about, and most of this is driven by that shift in worldview. So we see a consistent shift across the board in the purpose of education. Under our founder's worldview, which was by and large a Judeo-Christian understanding of reality, education was about laying this broad-based liberal arts education to prepare children for whatever the future might hold. This new worldview says that government knows best what the future is going to look like, and therefore we have to retrofit our kids into narrowly tailored career clusters, or today smaller learning communities, in order to prepare them for what they see the future holding. And what you end up with is a system of education that looks an awful lot like the education of Europe during the Dark Ages. That is, it's considered a waste of state funds to train someone beyond their station in life.
Excuse me, Malcolm, but you used a couple terms there. Now, are those terms you made up, clusters and small school environments?
Oh, no, sorry about that. I went through that rapidly. No, I never make up a term. I always use their terms, but I try my best to define what they are. Most folks recognize or have heard of the school-to-work system. What school-to-work is the structural change in education. That is, education for the purpose of job training. And the way they got business to buy into this whole scheme is by convincing businesses that we can transfer the cost of education to the taxpayer by by turning our public school system into a system of job training centers. So what has happened, education has shifted by two primary bills, that is the Goals 2000, which changed the content and philosophy of education, and School to Work, which changed the structure of education. And within School to Work, these little narrow fields of job training areas are considered or called career clusters. Now, under the Bush bill, the No Child Left Behind bill, if you turn to page 406 of that bill, you will see School to Work continues, but under its new name, Smaller Learning Communities. Doesn't that sound nice?
They have so many warm and fuzzy words, don't they?
Yeah, see, when one quits working or people find out what it is, they simply changed the packaging and reapply it and tell people, well, we've reformed it now and it's gone. The big myth, of course, with No Child Left Behind is that Goals 2000 and School to Work went away. But really, they were just the booster rockets that put the whole shuttle of this system in orbit. And No Child Left Behind now is mission control to sustain the orbit. It's the accountability measure to make sure now that every school, every state, every district has this system fully in place.
Mine, I get the sense that an increasing number of parents out there are beginning to wonder whether their children are receiving an academic exposure in their school today.
Well, I'll tell you what, the only reason kids learn any knowledge today is because of dedicated teachers who figure out creative ways around this system. But mark my words, the only thing that is really required anymore is a shift in attitudes, values, and beliefs to embrace this new philosophy and this new future that we're looking at building through our children. It's the reason we no longer test our children. We now assess them. You see, testing is a measure of objective academic knowledge. Assessment is something you look to measure value. We assess our homes for its value. We assess our children now for their value to society based on how well they now demonstrate that I now think this way. See, it wasn't good enough that we've been dealing for the past 60, 70 years with bias in the curriculum, but it was still knowledge-based. What this new system says is, you know, that wasn't doing good enough, doing a good enough job of preparing our children for this new world order. Now what we've done is we've gotten clever and come up with a new assessment tool that now assesses how well they demonstrate that they now think this way. And it is truly working.
Well, I'll tell you, at our local high schools, we have a number of programs that are designed to actually pull the children right out of the classroom, put them in a gymnasium session, where kids are asked all kinds of questions about their home and their attitudes about political issues or sexual issues or family issues. And, you know,
yeah, a lot of that is for psychodata collecting. What they do is it's kind of like marketing junk mail to your home. You know, if they know you're interested in certain things, you get certain kind of junk mail. Well, they want to find out what makes you buy. Well, it's the same thing with children. You know, they do a lot of assessments and a lot of surveys and ask personal intrusive questions. And the purpose of that is to find out what kind of a kid this is and then see how well he measures on his assessments. Then they know if this kid kind of answers questions that suggest he's kind of from a conservative background, but he's now starting to think the way of a leftist, well, then we know we've got a curriculum that's working. You see, the curriculum is the variable in this system. The assessment is the consistency. And it's really a method of psychoanalysis. And it's one of the reasons that most of the education conferences that the states host, they're licensed, or their speakers are licensed medical psychiatrists. They're not educators.
My. Is the effort to make this change in our children, is it working from their perspective? Or do they end their day, those who really know what's going on, do they end their day and say, we're winning?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Let me give you an example. The National Center for Education Statistics published a report recently called What Democracy Means to Ninth Graders. Now, this was the results of an education study of civics questions. And now these were ninth graders answering these questions. And let me just give you an example out of the economic-related area. This assessment measured the percentage of ninth grade students reporting that various economic-related actions should be the government's responsibility. And here are the results. 84.2% of ninth graders now believe it is government's responsibility to set prices. 66.2% believe now it's government's responsibilities to provide industries with the support they need to grow. That is capital. That's where you're seeing a lot of the capital, venture capital corporations who will now invest in businesses using government taxpayer money. Here's another one that's really important to understand where we're headed. 58.6% of ninth graders now believe it's government's responsibility to redistribute wealth. I'm sorry, that was 63.5%, so it's even larger. To reduce differences in income and wealth among people. Now, these are considered right answers. So these are the kinds of assessments they're measuring on things like the nation's report card, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. They are not knowledge-based tests. They are built to measure students' attitudes on where they now think government responsibility should be. So yes, the curriculum has been working quite well, and the results from the government's own site show it.
My. So in other words, we, mom and dad, are paying taxes to support a government school system that takes our children and fills them full of beliefs that they're that will result in their place being that of a serf to a new government form that is in the making.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, now people wonder, well, where in the world does this come from? Well, it is driven by the national content standards. The U.S. Department of Education has a laboratory system under its jurisdiction, 10 labs that determine what the education system is going to look like in America. And the Mid-Continental Regional Education Lab was in charge of setting the standards, or really handing the grant money out to non-government organizations to write the standards. I've got copies of all of these standards. They're available. You can actually purchase these. And I picked up the National Content Standards on Economics. And in light of the assessments I just read to you, let me read to you Content Standard 16. Number one, students will understand that there is an economic role for government to play in a market economy. Notice they don't use the term free market economy anymore. It's always a market economy. China has something that's managed.
China has a market,
market
economy.
Yeah, they compete. You could even say China has a competitive market economy. Technically, they compete with us in an economy. What's missing in China, of course, is freedom. And one of the interesting things in this national assessments and the national content standards, I don't see the term free market used anymore.
You know, this is Joan, and I can't stand it. You know, you're talking about these assessments, and then I'm going back because I go to the global conferences, and I'm looking at this draft covenant on environment and development, that's the environmental hard law that supports the Earth Charter and, of course, Agenda 21. And in Article 8, it talks about environmental protection and global equity, and equity is achieved through the implementation of the international economic order, of course, which is, so you're getting the children to respond to these concepts that are embedded in our global documents, and they just keep...
Well, absolutely. In fact, that's exactly where they came from.
Yeah.
UNESCO has, or actually the United Nations has now declared 2005 to 2015 the International Decade for Education for Sustainable Development.
And they've just endorsed the Earth Charter.
Yeah, and in fact, the Earth Charter is traveling around in a case that's made to look like the Ark of the Covenant. And they call it the Ark of Hope. In fact, you can go to arkofhope.com and see a picture of it with the earth, wind, fire, you know, the base elements of the Native Americans or the earth worship religions.
And did you know that the poles they carry it on represent unicorn horns? I just read that today, and then you need to go into the, you know, spiritual implications of unicorn horns, so I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. But if you go to, I urge your listeners to get a pencil, because I'm going to give you some websites where you can go and find out all this stuff yourself. But if you go to UNESCO.org and click on the Education for Sustainable Development, you can go through and read the new role of education in America. I mean, it's actually for the UNESCO, but if you go to then and compare that to our national content standards, you'll see they're identical. For instance, they highlight Chapter 36 of Agenda 21 as the purpose of education today for all nations. And they talk about preparing the future generations for the responsibilities as global citizens.
Yeah.
And if you... Oh, I'm sorry.
Just let me interject this for listeners here in Santa Cruz. We're having our water districts now, controlled generally by Sierra Club policy makers. Our water districts are now taking water district monies and using these monies to hire the local Agenda 21 implementers to teach children about our water streams. So there's now watershed education that will carry out this very idea of the environment being more important than human beings, and imbuing to those kids a guilt about being human or a guilt about having come from an American heritage. And so the education, this element of the Sustainable Development Program, education is coming from many directions.
Yeah, what you've just described, by the way, is the new geography standards. Geography is no longer... learning your continents, states, nations, whatnot, and rivers and mountains and different things like that. It is now something called human geography, and it's human interaction with the earth and our impact, and it's all negative. It's none of the positive changes humans have made to the earth, but the negatives. And as long as we're on this subject, I've had this article sitting here with me for a while that showed up in our newspaper here in Minnesota. It's written by a seven-year-old. So you can imagine where he gets his ideas from. But listen to what he writes. He says, we are destroying the black rhinoceros' grasslands that are homes to not only the black rhinoceros, but to many other plants and animals. When we cut down trees to build homes for us, we are also destroying homes that were already there. Some people say, why should we help save the black rhinoceros? I say, because to me, they are no more or less than we are. The animals are dying 1,000 times faster than they would be if it were just plants and animals in the world.
No.
Now, isn't that amazing for a seven-year-old to write to a paper? You know where he's getting this idea from is not mom and dad. Come on, it's geography class. This kid was paying attention in class. And the sad thing is here is we are scaring our kids to death. Thinking that they're all going to die if they don't become little activists for sustainable development.
Well, there's still going to be a number of people out there that are going to say, look, society isn't that unreasoned. These crazy ideas don't have a chance of really taking root. But I think our message is that it has taken root in very insidious ways, and we see it in many, many neurotic expressions. Teenagers today, many have a very difficult time of being engaged as a family member with their parents. And that strikes me with these new programs that we sense coming out of our schools, is a natural occurrence, because children need the nourishment of hope and of life and of potential and of abundance and of achievement and productivity, and so that they can develop their conscience into understanding that they truly can be something, that they're always going to be tempted and error prone, but that people can rise up to their own challenges, and that they can control life that's their own. But what we're getting are kids who are angry and who are frustrated, who are suffering from cognitive dissonance. That is, they're trying to reconcile reality that could be with the reality that is, and they end up increasingly unhappy. So what we're getting are children for this new world order to live down in their smart growth settlements with, in our county, they're now planning for 10,000 government-controlled housing units down along the railroad track on parcels that I suspect have been tied up by friends of this new government-private partnership circumstance. So they're building the infrastructure in our communities for the post-private property era, and they're preparing our children to live in it. And this is something that, that in the last hour we talked about, and all it's going to take is for a few lights to go on, and we're not going to get those lights turned on for us by Fox News and by Time Magazine. We're going to do it in circumstances just like this, and we're going to use the Internet, which is a whole lot better than how they did it in revolutionary times. Michael, tell us about how the word of liberty and truth got spread when that great awakening occurred.
Oh, yeah. Well, during our own revolutionary era, it was interesting. Samuel Adams created the Committees of Correspondence to get the word out, the truth out, because our founders couldn't trust the British-controlled press. And so we're facing, I believe, a very similar situation with our own media outlets through the Internet, through shows like Stan Montes and others, through our Internet access at edwatch.org. And other groups, we are literally connecting with folks all over the country. You know, I met up with you out in Santa Cruz and Tom DeWeese out in Virginia, and we put on a conference up in Maine along with Bev Eakman from Washington, D.C. Well, the only reason we got together was because of our Committees of Correspondence. And parents, listeners, wake up. Start getting your news from better sources. The mainstream press is not telling you what you need to know. In fact, I've discovered, actually I shouldn't take the credit for it, Maple River has discovered, Maple River used to be what we're called, we're now EdWatch, I'm sorry, but we discovered that there's a program called Newspapers and Education where the newspaper articles are now the basis of all the assessments. When you're supposed to read a text and then answer a number of questions about it, those texts are all based on newspaper articles. And the newspapers in our city, we couldn't figure out why we'd been writing dozens and dozens of commentary on how to get rid of our profile of learning, which was the Goals 2000 curriculum, and we couldn't get a single one published in any major newspaper to explain why we're against this system. Well, it turns out the newspapers are making a fortune on this system. They're not going to want to write or publish articles against it. There's a huge conflict of interest. So we do need to be about getting the truth out there through alternative sources.
Well, EdWatch has done quite a job in Minnesota. You've certainly informed people all over the country of the dynamic, but tell us about the legislative successes that you've been able to lead the state of Minnesota toward.
Well, we actually, after 5 years of work, a woman named Michelle Bachman, she's an attorney who gave up her law practice over this, and I spent probably 2 years off and on going to various cities around the state explaining what was going on. And we've now gotten a repeal of the Goals 2000, first state to repeal the Goals 2000 curriculum in the state of Minnesota.
Congratulations.
Does that music mean it's about time to take a break?
We're going to have a break here in just a minute then, Michael. Just to be patient. We'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there listening, we hope that many of you will consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, bringing you information you're not going to get elsewhere, and wonderful, wonderful programs like you've heard tonight with Joan Paris and with Michael Chapman and certainly with Michael Shaw. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, it's very simple. You just call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. If you'd like to get one of our newsletters, why they are available, it's free of charge. Our November newsletter deals with the subject of anti-Semitism, that rising anti-Semitism, not only across America, but across the world, and who's really behind it and why. And then, of course, our latest newsletter, our December newsletter, will be available in probably 10 days. It's the story of Judge Roy Moore and why. Why the attack on Judge Moore from both the liberal and conservative sides of the political spectrum, from the liberal and conservative so-called free press? What's this really all about, and why did the Supreme Court take God and prayer out of our schools back in the 1960s? Well, everybody knows what the Supreme Court decisions were, but why? And we answer that. Of course, we tell you a great deal that you're never going to get from any other source. So if you'd like to know what this is really all about, why Judge Moore has become sort of a lightning rod for attack, and why what he's done is so important, and what we must do to try to help him, and we cannot help him unless the American people understand why the Supreme Court began to change America back in the 1940s. And once you understand why, you'll never look at the world through quite the same eyes again. We hope that many of you will want to go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com, where you can hear our programs 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished, of course. You can listen to our archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters. And all of our newsletters are up there, usually within a week of the time that they are sent out. So you can get them there if you'd like to. Of course, it doesn't help us, but it will help, hopefully, the country. We give you our permission to copy anything off the newsletter, off the website, and distribute it to others. Ours is a battle of ideas, and we're losing because people do not understand. So if you pull down our material and the other material that you're hearing about tonight, just tell other people, and in a nice way, try to make them realize that freedom is never free. It has to be purchased in every generation. And what have you done to help preserve our freedom today?
We're back with Michael Chapman from EdWatch in the state of Minnesota. And Michael, when we went to break, we were talking about the legislation recently passed in your state that has the effect of neutralizing much of this federal education program in your state. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I shouldn't say we neutralize it. We've made an important first step, and actually just threw a little monkey wrench in the works for the globalists. But we're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, the debate then turns to what's going to replace the standards, as though they need to have standards. You know, in my book, I just leave it up to local control, but we're still engaging in the battle here. And one of the interesting things that happened was in the House version, where we have a totally Republican-controlled House, we managed to get some great language in the bill. One of them was that the standards must be consistent with promoting and preserving the principles contained in the Declaration of Independence. Unfortunately, the Senate side is controlled by the left and managed to get that removed. On the Senate floor, Senator Michelle Bachmann asked, well, why in the world did you remove that from the bill? And the head senator, Steve Kelly, answered, the Declaration has no legal status in defining people's rights and privileges. In other words, he's saying that the Declaration is no longer a foundation document. Now, he claimed it was, but then he went on to say it has no status in defining our rights. Well, without the Declaration defining our rights, we have no rights. The Constitution can then be made to say whatever it wants to be, and this is really where the battle is. In order to get the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as the foundation document, which the national curriculum does promote, they have to undermine the Declaration principles. And let me just give you an example. the No Child Left Behind legislation continues to fund a radical organization called the Center for Civic Education. It was a radical group formed in the late 60s, and they are working to undermine our national rights and sovereignty stated in the Declaration. At their website, you can find a letter that explains the new purpose of this federal curriculum. They have, now they hold the contract to write the standards, the curriculum, and the assessments for civics and government. And let me just read to you a little part of what they have to say at their website on the new purpose of education. This is in a document called Teaching Democracy Globally, Internationally, and Comparatively, the 21st Century Mission of Schools. It opens by saying, excuse me while I pull it up here, I'm sorry. In the past century, the civic mission of schools was education for democracy in a sovereign state. In this century, by contrast, education will become everywhere more global and international. We ought to improve our curricular frameworks and standards for a world transformed by globally accepted and internationally transcendent principles. Now, this is incredible to me that we are continuing to fund this organization to write our curriculum. Now, their textbook model is called We the People. And in that model textbook, they discuss the ideas of global government and global citizenship. And as such, they have a new definition of the term citizenship. Citizenship is now defined as the status of being a member of a state, one who owes allegiance to the government. It is no longer allegiance to the principles by which our government was founded. It is allegiance to the government. And then they go on to promote the universal human rights of the United Nations. What most people don't understand and what they don't teach is that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights now declares a new God or a new source of our rights. Article 29.3 states, "These rights and freedoms may in no case be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations." In other words, rights come from government, no longer from God. And that's the reason they must undermine the Declaration principles in order to make room for this new philosophy driving our national curriculum.
Well, you began that discussion by talking about how the 20th century education program was about democracy within nation states. Of course, you go back to what America really is and what the ideas for liberty require. It is precisely the avoidance of democracy as the ruling order in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Democracy has come to be interchangeable with a constitutional republic, and that's by design. Most people don't have a clue what the difference is, but you're right. If you read Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, you'll see that they guarantee we will never become a democracy. They guarantee a republican form of government. And the difference is quite profound and includes not just local elected representation, but also includes the source of authority. And in our constitutional republic, the source of authority was the Declaration of Independence, where we declared that our rights come from our inalienable rights come from God. And therefore, to undermine that, we have to convince people that we really are a democracy in pure form. And, of course, John Adams, I like his quotes especially, warned us about ever becoming what he called the devil's very own form of government. And, of course, he recognized that because the most famous popular vote in all of history was Crucify Christ. The mob, using a mob appeal to their emotion, immediately cried out for the crucifixion and the release of Barabbas, and the government even knew Christ was innocent. But that is the definition of democracy, and why we followed the biblical model to come up with a constitutional republic.
Well, Plato said democracy would lead to dictatorship, and Mikhail Gorbachev is quoted as saying, "More democracy means more socialism." So you put those two ideas together, and particularly when expressed by a man like Mikhail Gorbachev, and I think we begin to see what's really behind this. And in the last hour, we talked about how Mikhail Gorbachev is key
to the center of the entire Earth Charter idea. So we're starting to see that these are ideas that are tyrannical, and they're coming from some pretty nefarious fellows. So our warning is up, because it's whether you're talking about the evolving law or the evolving new economy or the evolved education of our children, the creation of a new world order where man, in the words of the Department of Interior, is to be regarded as a biological resource. It sure sounds to me, Michael, that our schools are doing precisely that with the minds of our children. Of course, some kids come out of that and intact. How do you explain, with the nature of what's been discussed tonight, how it is that sometimes kids come out okay?
Well, I think it's getting more and more difficult. I'll be honest with you. My daughter, who just recently graduated from college, attended one of the most conservative Christian colleges in Minnesota, and she was bombarded daily with pure, unadulterated Marxism. And this is in a Christian college. I'm finding the same materials in every single college. In fact, I was just going through another Christian school. A teacher gave me a copy of the Stanford Achievement Test booklet, and it states, it's actually on the front of it, it says that this is the version for Christian schools, and yet in the introduction it states that the entire test is based on the Center for Civic Education principles. And so we're being bombarded constantly, and though some children may come out with their faith intact, they're certainly not coming out with an understanding enough of our true form of government and our true principles to be able to give a good argument why we ought to keep what we have. So even if they come out with their faith intact, they're certainly not coming out prepared for the maintenance of freedom. And that's so important for people to understand, that in our founding history, throughout the first 185-200 years of our history, education was never about preparing for a job. That was not the purpose of education. Education was about preparing for the maintenance of liberty. The job came naturally with knowledge and skills and different things we learn. But we have changed that over now to prepare. I started to tell that story, I think, at the beginning. But if you think about the kings and queens era and training the commoners for the labor that they intended to do, the best education was saved for the princes and princesses who would one day grow up to rule the nation. They needed to know economics, geography, history, languages, etc., the base subjects, because they were going to rule the nation. Well, see, in America, we are a self-governing nation. All of our children are the princes and princesses who will one day grow up to rule this nation. So whether you're a truck driver, waitress, or a doctor, or lawyer, or politician, you have a duty to have a fundamental understanding of the principles upon which freedom is based.
Well, I think that is about as eloquently stated and to the core as we can get on this whole issue. What do you say to the parents who say, well, this sounds bad, and I see a little smoke. I don't know where the fire is. How do I find the fire in my own community? How would you respond to a parent who asked what he ought to consider doing in order to make a contribution to himself, his family, his country, and humanity?
Well, other than getting involved in organizations like EdWatch and Stan Montes, Network and the Your Cause and others, we have a moral responsibility to our children to be involved. By the way, we must be salt as well as light in this world. Salt being that precious commodity that was used as a preservative, and the meaning being that we must preserve our culture. If we're not about doing that, we'll lose the freedom to spread the light of truth. So we have a moral and a Christian responsibility to be involved in our public square. But on top of that, I would say, parents, your children are your most important mission field. I'll tell you what I tell all my friends. get your kids out of the government school system. There is nothing. I'll tell you what, I've challenged teachers, and that's not to say that the teachers are the bad guys. There's a lot of good and well-meaning and well-intentioned teachers in the public school system, but I've challenged teachers before. You bring me any textbook in any subject on any page for any grade level, and I'll show you blatant propaganda towards this new end. In fact, I'll even go one step further. I'll show it to you in math class. I've got the National Math Curriculum Standards written by the National Council on the Teachers of Mathematics. Let me just read to you one standard, number 3. Students learn that mathematics is man-made, that it is arbitrary, and good solutions are arrived at by consensus. You see, the point here is this is a postmodern worldview that declares there is no truth, there's only process, even in math class. And so we're dumbing our kids down and turning them into worker serfs for a future planned economy. There's nothing that I can say is valuable in there. Now, that's not speaking for EdWatch. That's speaking for Mike Chapman personally. Within EdWatch, we still feel we have a moral responsibility to do everything we can within the public system to reform it and change it and protect the children who have no choice or who won't be coming out of that system.
If you could help me with something, what I find people responding to me so often is, you know, I see it, but I don't know why others don't see it. My brother, who's a minister, his wife is getting her teaching credential, and they, as well as others, say, well, I know there are really bad schools out there, but our school is so good. I mean, we don't have any problems in our school. How do you respond?
Yeah, well, most people judge their own schools based on the niceness of their teachers, and most of the teachers are very nice people. You know, ask them how many of the books they've read out of that school. Have they read page 47 of the geography class? You know, I mean, most parents don't read their children's curriculum. And keep in mind, grades are merely a marketing tool for parents. They have no bearing anymore, really, on the knowledge measurement. In fact, we're transferring over to a rubric system, which is not a numeric equivalent to the grading system. It's more of a subjective measure of the assessments. So parents aren't seeing it for a number of reasons. In fact, I've run into teachers who haven't seen it unless I pointed it out to them. You've got to understand how propaganda works. If global government propaganda, let's call it green in color, if the textbooks and the teachers just painted green, everybody would see it. Well, look, there's green all over this classroom. We got to get our kids out. See, the publishers were a lot more clever, and they used a trick that the Impressionist painters found out, and that was you could achieve a much more vibrant green by painting little strokes of blue and little strokes of yellow next to each other and allowing the mixing to happen in the mind's eye. This is the problem, you see. You put two half-truths together, and it makes up a lie. Benjamin Franklin once said a half-truth is often the greater lie. Well, that's absolutely true in the best propaganda. And the textbooks are full of propaganda. You know, I relate the fact that kids in second grade, the entire purpose of second grade, by the way, is to transfer loyalty from the family to the state. Look, just read your kids' learning and communities textbook in second grade social studies. But what they do in there is when they show pictures and different things of the family, always role reversal. It's always sedentary activities with very dull colors. When you move into the areas of how we learn in schools, all of a sudden there's an explosion of color and excitement. And that's meant to draw children towards this new exciting world they're being prepared for and to undermine the authority in the home and family. That's a very subtle change, but it's there. You'll see it in your kids' textbooks. Most people won't notice that, just cracking it open, unless you point it out. And then you look at it and you say, well, my goodness, you're right. It is there. So you have to learn how the propaganda works. I wrote a little booklet called Dreamers of a Godless Utopia for the purpose of training Christian parents and teachers how to recognize the propaganda in their own books. It's a very difficult thing to spot, and so people have to be aware and understand how to recognize it. Believing is seeing.
Well, a brilliant professor named George Reisman, economics professor at Pepperdine, says that as America begins to pick up on one or two of the vast number of intrusions, of outrageous intrusions that's being systematically implemented by our government at all levels, when a person can see a couple of those, the rest are going to fall like dominoes. Because there's a pattern here, whether we're talking about treatments of private property or community infrastructure improvement or welfare programs for government's favorite business partners or the dependency programs they have for individuals. The pattern is the same. The coordination is the same. And you say, well, what's really consistent about each of these? It's that every one of these policies and so many more, and particularly our National Educational Department, is to undermine the citizenry's understanding or commitment to the constitutional principles of self-governance.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is to suck us down to that dark abyss of tyranny where some elite controls all aspects of human action. And,
yeah.
And the children's minds and the property of the citizens, the natural resources of the country, are key to making that happen. And once it occurs, it's a long, dark age that humanity will suffer. And that's why this is so important. It seems to me that the success that Ed Watch did have in creating the debate on the floor of the Minnesota legislature has profound effects, because I tell you, you haven't had those kinds of debates on the legislature of California for a good long time. And when the debate gets started, we win. Because these are not principles that are difficult for people to understand. You know, if they put focus on these things for a short period of time, it will come quickly to them. Because they're really simple differences, particularly once you've spent the time contemplating it and evaluated what it is that constitutes liberty and what philosophy and practice makes it work and what leads to tyranny.
You know, a lot of people wonder, well, why in the world would anybody do this? You know, history is full of failed attempts at this, or I should say nations have fallen because of putting this system in place. And people need to understand that it's driven really by a worldview ideology that says human nature is basically good because we all evolved, right? So human nature is basically good. So how do you explain the evil men do? You have to look to external sources. And so this worldview says that you fix the environment, you fix the externals to perfect man. It's a misplaced ideology which has proven itself false, but that's what they're driven by. It is their religion that is at fault here. And so they are driven to trying to perfect society by changing man. And the best way to change man is through education, through a manipulative education that shapes and pushes mankind into its vision of what we need to perfect society. This was the fundamental difference between Karl Marx and James Madison. James Madison said, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. Karl Marx said, man's nature is so constituted that he can attain his own perfection for the betterment of society. And so you have Marxists today in our colleges because they honestly believe in that ideology, that man's nature is perfectible. And therefore, if we just manipulate the environment correctly, we'll perfect society and build this utopia on Earth. Problem is, it doesn't work.
Well, and if they think it really does work, the only way it's going to happen is to totally enslave humankind and have them so divorced from their nature that they become pure biological resources used for as long as they're needed and expended with thereafter. So the human beings are reduced to the level of an animal.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, that's what happened to the Soviet Union. They were trying to create the perfect beehive, and what happened was they destroyed productivity, they destroyed incentive, because they didn't understand the truth of human nature. And so Russia was never achieved Marx's dream of this godless, governmentless utopia. It turned fascist. It became total control of everything, because absolute or power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And let me just give you a final warning from, I know we're getting close to the end of your time here, but George Washington warned us about this in his farewell address to the nation. And he said, whatever measures contribute to violate or lessen the sovereign authority ought to be considered as hostile to the liberty and independence of America, and the authors of them treated accordingly. Folks, our curriculum today is written by a pack of folks who are undermining the sovereign authority that is the basis of our independence and liberty. And we need to be about getting back our freedom.
Well, and I like the idea of starting that right in the family. Take responsibility to cause your children to understand the nature of America and the requirements of freedom. And the first thing to do is to pull them out of dangerous zones where very capable manipulation of their psyche can be put upon them in a way that by the time they're a teenager, they're already become alienated from you and confused unto themselves, and leaving themselves in a position where their parenting will become successively worse generation by generation, because this government school system is separating the unity of a family, and that's the foundation for a government of people who are in charge of their own life, you know, the government of liberty.
Yeah, and the family is the final unit. The family is the final organization that is under unbelievable attack today. And if we lose that, there's nothing left. There's nothing left to save our liberty. Can I get my website out?
Yes, sir. Please do.
Please, folks, get on to edwatch.org. We also have a political action committee at edaction.org. And sign up for our email alerts. These pertain to the nationwide agenda for education. Let me also recommend on that site a great book by Dr. Alan Quist, a political science professor who wrote the book Fed Ed, to explain how the federal curriculum is driven into the local classroom and exactly what principles they are promoting within that. An excellent little book. It's an easy way to hand something to someone. I read the book in about 2 hours, and it is really well put together. He did a fantastic job on this book.
This book is spreading across the country, and I'm gonna predict that that book's sales will just continue to rise until it's a book that really has made a major impact on this country. So that's a good place for the listeners to begin, because pick a piece, if you've got kids, a great piece to make your contribution to the restoration and protection of liberty in this country is to understand the educational process, where it's gone wrong, and what you need to do to protect your own children and the children of your neighbors. Thank you, Michael Chapman, very much for this hour, and I'm sure going to look forward to seeing you somewhere in this great country sometime soon, and I hope it's in Santa Cruz.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
Good night.